Well, actually, so we're going to get started, but so I'll go ahead and give an introduction. I'm co-presenting with Steve Hemler. We're part of the Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America, based here in Northern Virginia. We go around and talks on various topics, apologetics, proof of God, Gospels, proof of the Catholic Church. I'll just run some of our presentations as God and Science, where it says, evidence lead, which is true, creational, evolution, or both? Is Jesus truly the Son of God? Near-death experiences, and there's a great movie out now called After Death on near-death experiences, played at the movie theaters. How are we saved? Why do we need the church? And why would a loving God allow evil, pain, and suffering? So those are some of the presentations that we also give one on Eucharistic miracles, which is amazing. It's just what happens when the Eucharist actually turns into flesh and blood. This has been scientifically verified. But as far as my background, I'm a senior fellow. My name is Patrick Chisholm. I'm a senior fellow at the Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America, or CANA, and author of this book, Holy Health, How Church Makes You Healthier and Happier. Former columnist for the Christian Science Monitor, has written articles and publications that include the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, USA Today, Crisis, and 1 Peter 5. Have a BA in history from Colorado College and a master's in international economics from American University. The faith runs, I hold a faith.
I'm so sorry, I'm the teacher here. Oh, I just left
no problem.
Here earlier.
No problem.
Yeah. I'm so sorry to interrupt.
That's all right.
Have a nice night, everybody.
Thank you for allowing us to teach your room.
Of course.
And a specialized catechist certificate in apologetics from the Diocese of Arlington High. And I'm a parishioner here at St. Veronica in Chantilly, and lecturer, men's apostolate leader at TMIY, that man is you, I don't know if you're familiar with it, and for not this year, but up until recently, I was a CCD or RE teacher, religious education teacher. So that's my background. Steve, would you like to say a little bit something about your background?
We'll see if I have seen anything. I've never even seen this talk, so I'm not sure. I'm ready
so far,
a good person to present.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that this is Steve Hemler and Lee Granger. They're also with CANA, and they've never given this presentation before, so they want to see me give it, so that they can
know about
themselves. You know. Let me get my pointer and turn that on. All right, so this presentation is How Church and Faith Enhance Mental and Physical Health. The name of the book is How Church Makes You Healthier and Happier. I put physical health before mental health because I thought it would be more attention-grabbing. I mean, it's kind of easier to see how church would enhance your mental health, but physical health? That's kind of surprising. But we'll get into that in the presentation. So, I think this is the great thing that church not only... And faith not only helps us achieve eternal happiness in the next life, but happiness in this life too. It's just something to cheer about. And we'll go all into that as we get started. So the presentation overview, I'll focus on first the mental health crisis, and then the mental health crisis, which we're all familiar with, and church going enhances mental health, church going enhances life outcomes, I'll speak about. And after that, we'll talk about how church going enhances physical health, and then reasons why church going enhances mental and physical health. So the mental health crisis. Unhappiness, as we all know, is reaching crisis levels. The decline in religious practice is much to blame. In fact, Harvard epidemiologists calculate that 40% of the rise in suicide and mental illness is directly due to the decline in regular church going. A lot of it has to do with the rise in social media, but another big factor is the decline in church going. So the drop-off in church going is fueling the rise in deaths of despair, which is a phrase that's been bandied about for the past several years by academics. Okay, deaths of despair from depression, which leads to suicide, from drugs, which leads to overdosing, especially in the opioid crisis, and drink, cirrhosis of the liver and just drinking oneself to death. That's actually, life expectancy has actually gone down a little bit in the past 10 years after 100 years of going up, and much of that is due to so-called deaths of despair. Now we're going to listen to Chris Stefanik, a Catholic evangelist, talk a little bit about this.
The fastest growing religious group in the Western world is the nuns, people who don't identify with any particular religion. In the United States, nuns recently surpassed Roman Catholics. And the younger you get, the more and more people you see identifying as nuns. You know what else they're finding? More and more people are unhappy. Among Generation Z, they're arguably, according to all studies, the most anxious, most depressed, most despairing generation in history, where so many people are just trying to find a sense of purpose and meaning to life and they're coming up empty. What if we're throwing away religion because of what we think it is, or how it's been presented to us in the wrong way, rather than what's really there? And what if, in the process, we're just throwing away the answer to every question of the human heart? It seems like we're just overlooking the answer right in the palm of our hands. It's been there all along.
Okay, without God in our lives, our hearts are restless. Famous quote from St. Augustine is, our hearts are restless until they rest in thee. And by restless, we mean dissatisfaction. Restlessness, in this sense, means dissatisfaction, anxiety, or even depression. C.S. Lewis, a famous Christian writer, said, God cannot give us happiness and peace apart from himself. Just as a gas-powered car is designed to run only on gasoline and would sputter and stall if anything else, God designed humans to run only on himself. It's just no good, he says, asking God to make us happy in our own way without bothering about religion, observes Lewis. Here's another video on the mental health crisis, especially as it relates to youth, because the mental health crisis is most acute among youth these days.
Today's youth and young adults are in the midst of a full-blown mental health crisis. Even before COVID, an astounding 45% of U.S. college students felt so depressed that it was difficult to function within the previous 12 months. 66% felt overwhelmed with anxiety. 43% felt overwhelmed with anger. And more than 1 in 10, 13%, seriously considered suicide. And post-COVID, the situation is even worse. It's no coincidence that mental illness among America's younger generation is at all-time high, while their religious beliefs and practice are at all-time lows. From 2009 to 2019, the percent of young people claiming to have no religion climbed sharply from 27% to 40% of that population. Practically in lockstep, those suffering mental illness went from 18% to 29% of young people. It's been a very similar story with suicide. Atheism and agnosticism are bad for your mental health. Harvard epidemiologist Tyler Van Leer, Sean Chong Lee, and Kachira Kawachi calculated that nearly 40% of the increase in suicide and mental illness stems from the drop-off in church attendance. Wake up, youth of today. By turning your back on God and church, you are falling into depression, drink, drugs, and despair. In droves. In high school and college, it's easy to get depressed and disillusioned about life. Teachers and professors push their anti-God ideology upon impressionable young minds. To atheists, you're just body and no soul. As the famous atheist Richard Dawkins, if you are not, you are for nothing. You are here to propagate your self-esteem. There is no higher purpose in life. This is absolute bunk. Evidence is abundant that we have souls, that there is a supernatural world, and that God most certainly exists. He loves us immensely. He has a plan and purpose for each and every one of us. Loving God back is proven to be good for your mental wellness. Hope is really important. Things have a purpose. God can take something bad and turn it around into something good, knowing that there's life after death, remarked Dr. Harold Conia of the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health at Duke University, and a leader in the field of how religion benefits mental and physical health. Religion says there are other sources of truth, and we don't understand everything right now, and there just might be something more to this life.
We'll hear a little bit from Dr. Harold Koenig shortly in this video. This way. Now we're talking about the youth mental health, the mental health crisis in general. Now we're going to discuss how church going enhances mental health. Now, true happiness, as I alluded to at the beginning of this presentation, isn't just reserved for the afterlife in heaven, which is the main reason for faith. Now, what this whole presentation, the mental and physical health benefits, is just an added bonus. It shouldn't be the reason you go to church. It's just an added bonus. The spiritual reasons are the main reasons you go to church. But anyway, so it's not just reserved for the afterlife in heaven. It's actually obtainable in this life as well. So to do that, it's necessary to live out the teachings of the church. We have a little girl there receiving Holy Communion. And that's the Eucharist exposed in the monstrance, symbolizing Eucharistic adoration when you go to the church or a chapel, and the exposed Eucharist is there in the monstrance, and you just pray before it. That's a wonderful, wonderful thing from the spiritual standpoint, but also just from a mental health standpoint as well. And there's a picture of a gentleman hearing confessions, and we'll talk a little bit about the mental health benefits of confession later in the presentation. So, keep in mind, Jesus did not guarantee happiness if you embrace the faith, but they may still be suffering, but there's a different kind of suffering. Instead of, say, depression or anxiety, it could be penances and mortifications and choosing meekness over lashing out, or moderation in food, drink, and social media. Sort of a different kind of suffering, which is not nearly as bad as depression and other types of suffering that we're so familiar with. Now, evidence abounds that embracing God in church commonly results in true happiness in this life. There's literally thousands of scientific studies confirming that church and faith enhance both mental and physical health. Compared with people who only sometimes, rarely, or never go to church, regular churchgoers tend to have greater emotional wellness. And these conclusions are based on literally thousands of surveys and studies. This is one such survey, I think, was carried out by Pew Research. You can't see it very well, it's a little blurry, but they did surveys of people in multiple countries, I think 25 different countries, and in almost every country, the actively religious people are the most happy. They have the red is actively religious, and then between is inactive and the unaffiliated. So typically, the actively are religious are the happiest, inactively, in between, and unaffiliated, least happy in most countries. Now, peer-reviewed academic studies on the mental and physical benefits of church-going continually get published in prestigious scholarly journals, such as JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the BMJ, the 400 or 500-year journal out of Great Britain, that stands for the British Medical Journal, the New England Journal of Medicine, the Lancet Psychiatry, Journal of Consulting and Clinical Psychology, Demography, literally probably hundreds of different scientific journals these studies have been published in. Now, the investigators are psychologists, sociologists, physicians, epidemiologists, biomedical scientists at hundreds of prominent universities and hospitals, and many of which are Ivy League, the Yales, the Stanfords, the MITs, the Universities of Pennsylvania. So it's just amazing that these studies focusing on the benefits of religion are coming out of all these universities that we associate with being so secular and anti-religious. So it's pretty remarkable. I talk about that in the book. And this, okay, we're going to hear from some of those scholars right now.
What's the mix of religious factors to medicine? Suffering is automatically connected with meaning.
A search for the sacred, a way of transcending everyday experience.
Religious involvement affects every aspect of a person's health. Hello, my name is Dr. Harold Koenig. Welcome to the Center for Spirituality, Theology, and Health. We at the center are a group of researchers from multiple disciplines, theology, medicine, psychiatry, sociology, psychology, and nursing. We are asking the question, is religion good for your health?
As a practicing psychiatrist, I really convinced that you cannot treat a person who is suffering from an emotional problem and not consider their faith background, their beliefs, their values, their sense of their connection to the universe, connection to God.
As a sociologist, I began as a skeptic. And the facts are, although we cannot totally explain them, in and of themselves, religious and spiritual practices have an independent and positive effect on health.
Research groups around the world suggest that people who are more engaged in religious beliefs and practices experience less depression, lower levels of anxiety. They're more likely to live a healthier life.
We know that religious traditions matter for health. We know that religious practices matter. Physicians and researchers, sociologists, priests, imams, rabbis, spiritual directors, and others can meet in a collaboration and come out with the ability to speak and to think in ways that were not possible otherwise.
Over time, we have studied the relationship between religious beliefs and practices and depression, religion and anxiety, blood pressure, immune function, and a person's genetic makeup, and coping with illness, their sense of happiness and their fulfillment in life. Religion affects just about everything.
The most striking findings have to do with the relationship between religious service attendance and mortality. They live 8 years longer on average. That's pretty impressive.
We've got a medical crisis in our country, and what we're realizing is that trained professionals within the medical field cannot do it alone. We've got to partner with other groups.
The implications are vast. These findings from research could transform healthcare. If you're interested in learning more about the center and its activities, please visit our website.
As an example of the benefits of regular church going, during COVID in late 2020, at the start of that pandemic, a Gallup survey found that the number of people who deemed their mental health as being excellent dropped substantially from the previous year. Now, this was true for nearly every demographic, whether you were male, female, married, non-married, lower income, higher income, non-churchgoer, monthly churchgoer. The percentage of people who reported that their mental health was excellent plummeted by anywhere from 5 to 10 to 12%. The only demographic where that was not true was weekly churchgoers. You can see that they're at the very end there, and their mental health actually went up 4 percentage points on average. Now here's suicide incidents of churchgoers versus non-churchgoers. And there are two lines there. A suicide incidence is basically synonymous with mental illness. You could say incidence of mental illness, and I'm sure that would graph right about the same. Okay, the yellow is Catholics, and the black line is Protestants. These are people who never go to church. Okay, they have the highest incidence of suicide. And this is based on something called the Nurses' Health Studies, where they tracked nurses over the course of several decades to analyze their habits in various aspects. And so those who never went to church had the highest incidence of suicide. It's even higher for Catholics than for Protestants among those who never went to church. But interestingly, it actually goes up for Protestants for those who go to church less than once a week. It goes down for Catholics. And these are those nurses who went to church once a week. Okay, it goes down to 2 per 100,000 for Protestants, and it's lower for Catholics. And this is Protestants. So those who go to church more than once a week, for Protestants, it's even lower, and for Catholics, almost zero. For those who go to daily Mass, or at least to Mass more than once a week, more than Sunday, the incidence of suicide in the survey was zero. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's never been a daily Mass goer who's ever committed suicide, but on average, the incidence of suicide among daily Mass goers, or at least those who go to Mass more than once a week, is nearly zero, which is synonymous with saying that the rate of mental health, the incidence of mental health, is much lower among daily Mass goers than those who go less frequently. The perils of lukewarm religiosity. Some of these studies have found an interesting thing where the lukewarm, people who are just lukewarm in their faith and maybe go to church every so often, are actually have worse mental health and atheists, people who don't go to church at all. And this graph depicts that. This is a graph of overall, anybody who's ever had a mental illness during their lifetime, for weekly churchgoers or regular church attenders, is 15%. So, which is another way of saying, okay, this doesn't guarantee that you'll ever have, you know, unhappiness or sadness or mental illness. Of course, churchgoers still mentally mental health issues. So it's 15.6% for religious people, weekly church attenders. And for the non-religious people who never go to church, the incidence of mental illness was 18.7%. And for moderate religious people, moderately religious people who may say that they're a Christian but they hardly ever go to church, the rate of mental illness is even higher, at least in the survey, at 20.4%. So across all religions, the more religiously devout or orthodox the person that is carefully following all the precepts of the faith, the greater the likelihood of good mental health. So that's what this survey depicts. And it's not the case necessarily in all surveys, but in this one and others it is. The fact that lukewarm people actually have worse mental health outcomes than non-religious. Now this shows kind of the physical evidence of the benefits of church going. Now, this is brain scan, a composite of 103 people who agreed to have their brain scan. Some of whom had mental health issues, and others who didn't. And they did a survey. They found out what their religious practices were, and the outer layer of the brain is called the cerebral cortex, the outer layer of the brain. And people with more mental health issues or mental health problems tend to have a thinning of the cerebral cortex, and happier people tend to have a thicker cerebral cortex. And the gray indicates thinning of the cerebral cortex. And this side is a composite of a person who does not consider religion to be very important, so they have thinner cerebral cortex. And this is a person who considers religion to be very important. They have much less thinning of the cerebral cortex, only just a little bit of grayness in there. So that's pretty stark evidence, stark physical evidence of the benefits of church going. Now, Carl Jung, he's a famous prominent psychoanalyst right up there with Freud. He lived from 1875 to 1861. I believe he was Swiss. But the quote from him is that among all my patients in the second half of life, that is to say over 35, there has not been one whose problem in the last resort was not that of finding a religious outlook on life. It's safe to say that every one of them fell ill because he had lost that which the living religions of every age have given their followers. And none of them has been really healed who did not regain his religious outlook. And we'll have another quote from him later in this presentation. Now, what about people who say they're spiritual but not religious? Now, those could be people who say that they're Christians but never go to church. Maybe they say, oh, I read the Bible sometimes, and I'm Christian, but I never go to church. But I'm spiritual. I'm spiritual but not religion. Spiritual but not religious also often refers to New Age religions, people who believe in such things such as astrology, reincarnation, channeling the supposed deceased, and transcendental meditation, astral projection. And those people could be classified as spiritual but not religious. Okay, what about that? Are there any mental health benefits to that? I mean, you do meditation. I mean, that can improve your mental outlook or your happiness, at least for a short time. As far as the long-term benefit, there haven't been studies that have confirmed that. Now, they're missing out on the benefits of communal worship, which is key to better wellness, and we'll get into that later. But face-to-face interaction, really key for mental wellness, is face-to-face interaction with other people and doing things with other people, singing in choirs and praying with other people in a group setting. Could be going to communion, lecturing, being a lecturer at Mass, ushering, being part of the choir, being in youth groups, volunteering. So that, the studies have found, has a really beneficial effect on overall well-being. But you don't get that if you don't go to a communal worship service, like a lot of spiritual but not religious people. They're also avoiding the responsibilities and the obligations and commandments and self-discipline of organized religion. I talk a lot about in the book. People who go to church regularly and take their faith seriously tend to be much more self-disciplined about things than people who are less religious. And there are certain rules and certain teachings that you follow, and that even though they might be hard to carry out initially, over the long run, it results in better overall well-being. Now, there are four levels of happiness, according to Father Robert Spitzer. He's one of my idols. I just love him. He's the president of the Majus Center for Reason and Faith out in California. He's also on EWTN, the Catholic TV and radio station, a lot. He hosts something called Father Spitzer's Universe. He's prominent in Catholic apologetics, the compatibility of science and faith. He talks about near-death experiences. He talks about happiness a lot, too. So he came up with something called the four levels of happiness. Now, the first level is immediate gratification. Two P-words can describe that. Pleasure and possessions. Eating good food. Eating, drinking, going to your favorite sports game or playing your favorite sports, just going out and having fun, many of which are innocent, fine, but there are a lot of things in that category that can lead to unhappiness down the road, including drugs, alcohol, promiscuity. So you say the four levels of happiness, this might be initial happiness for a lot of this, but often number one and two lead to sadness down the road. This two is ego comparative. That's a different type of happiness. It has to do with ego, feeling better and your status. The four P's describing that is popularity, praise, prestige, and power. Now, Father, I'm going to play a video of Father Spitzer right after this, and he'll go into this. But as I said in the beginning, a big reason for the decline, the rise in mental illness is the decline in church going. Another one is social media. And I would say social media encompasses both one and two. Because you want to get on your social media, you want to check your Facebook, and see what's going on. That gives you a little bit of a high, and it makes you happy. And then you want to see, how many likes did I get? That's ego comparative. Wow. How many likes did I get compared to this person? How many likes did this person get? and how popular am I? Who's reading my stuff? So that's more ego comparative. So social media combines one and two level of happiness, which, as I said, often leads to sadness down the road. So, and there's a quote to go with that. St. Paul the Sixth. I love this quote by St. Paul VI. Technological society, and he was a pope back in the 60s and 70s, and this applied back then as it applies now too, even more so now. Technological society has succeeded in multiplying the opportunities for pleasure, but it has great difficulty in generating joy. Now, levels 1 and 2, level of happiness is not joy. We get into 3 and 4, and that joy is something different from pleasure and short-term happiness. And I love this quote by Thomas A. Kempis. He was writer of a classic book called The Imitation of Christ, which is the second most widely read book in the world, next to the Bible. It came out in the late 1400s. But his quote is, "For they often receive the penalty of sorrow from the very thing whence they believe their happiness comes." So I think that can be applied to a lot of things these days, like social media, drugs, drink, things of that nature. So we'll go into level 3, level of happiness. Okay, this is a deeper, this is more solidly grounded level of happiness. It's called contributive or charitable, putting others before self, helping other people, volunteering for charitable activities, you know, helping neighbors, helping somebody, an old lady across the street, putting others before, just being, not lashing out when you feel like lashing out, but kind of controlling yourself and trying to say something nice rather than something mean to your family members. So it focuses on serving others through donating, volunteering, and for example, taking a job for lower pay than what you could actually earn just because you want to help other people doing this. So that's 3. And 4 is ultimate good, which is deep faith and union with God. It's the deepest and most solid type of happiness, the spiritual and transcendent, yearning for achieving truth, goodness, love, beauty, and being. By the way, Father Spitzer didn't just come up on his own. He read the great philosophers, and many of the philosophers over the course of centuries, back to the ancient times. And so these 4 levels are based on what he gleaned from reading the great philosophers. So let's hear from Father Spitzer right now.
For level 1 is the kind of happiness that comes from sensual pleasure and material possession. Something that comes to me from outside and stimulates me. Bob Spitzer sees the bowl of linguine, lunges toward the bowl of linguine, wolfs it down and goes yum. Bob Spitzer moves into the Mercedes 500 feet class with leather upholstery. Smells the great upholstery, of course, feels the fine German engineering going into the turns and gaining on forever. And he's happy. Level 2. This is the kind of happiness that comes when you're winning. It's the kind of happiness that comes when you shift the locus of control to yourself from the outside. It comes when you feel yourself better than others, or acknowledged to be so. Well, there's very good things that come from level 2 happiness, right? Develop a sense of competitiveness and a sense of excellence, and these are good things, a sense of self-esteem. But if you let level 2 happiness, think of the bare happiness, really get you. If you make that the sole reason, purpose for your life, this is what is success, my definition of success. Then you start finding yourself in what's called an eco-comparative turmoil that I call the comparison game. Who's achieving more? Who's achieving less? Who's got more status? Who's got less status? Who's got more popularity? Who's got less popularity? Who's got more control? Who's got less control? Who's got more power? Who's got less power? Who's smarter? Who's not as smart? Who's more athletic? Certainly not me. Who's less athletic? Who, is more beautiful? Who is less beautiful? You get the point. If this is on your mind 24/7, whether you view yourself as winning, losing, and drawing, and if you're worried about it if you're losing, and if you're just contemptuously proud if you're winning, you are going to be in some kind of trouble. I'll explain in a moment. 71% of our culture is in some kind of trouble. And I'm going to call that emptiness and alienation and loneliness and the negative emotions of the comparison game in one moment. Let's go to level three. A happiness that comes from what we'll call contributive happiness. Contribution. Or what the Christian tradition has called charity or agape or love. It's the kind of happiness that comes from trying to make an optimal positive difference to someone or something beyond myself with my life. For my family and my friends, for society, right? For the church, for the kingdom of God, for my community, for the organization and the institutions with which I work, right? All of these things, if I'm trying to make an optimal positive difference to everything I can before I die, I am going to call that a contributive level of happiness. And when Augustine reaches this in the Confessions, he shifts his the word for happiness from Felix to Beatus, or from which we get the Beatitudes, right? Which means happiness, but happiness in a sense that's a profound, contributive, charitable happiness. And the fourth level of happiness, desire for perfect truth, perfect love, perfect goodness or justice, perfect beauty, and perfect home. Augustine goes further than Plato. He realizes that perfect truth, love, goodness, beauty, and home is not enough. What we really want is to be an interpersonal communion with God, who was present to our souls from the very day of our conception, and in being present to our souls was inviting us and calling us to be in deeper relationship with Him. And when we are not in that deep relationship with Him, as the American Psychiatric Association study showed, and what did they notice about human beings? Their need for transcendence, their need to be in a relationship with God, with this mysterious, perfect truth, love, goodness, goodness, beauty, and home creator, this omniscient being, this perfectly loving and good being. What happens when people become non-religiously affiliated? What they show in that study is that suicide rates go up by 3 times. Also, what they show is that impulsivity levels, aggressivity levels, depression levels, malaise levels, familial tension levels, and substance abuse levels go up, you know, exponentially, with only one factor being addressed: religious affiliation. Make no mistake about it, because when we separate ourselves from God or ignore Him altogether, we are in a state of restlessness, of us. We're in a state of malaise. We get into states of profound emptiness and loneliness. We get into states where, of course, almost compelled, you know, in a way, for substance abuse, aggressivity, suicide, and other things. And it's very low time.
So, you mentioned the word joy, but levels 3 and 4 are associated with joy, a permanent, deep happiness, whereas levels 1 and 2 are just a transient happiness. And I think studies show that priests and nuns, they're some of the happy people in the world, but they don't even experience level 1 and 2 at all. That's the same for a lot of saints throughout history. They, level 1 and 2 happiness, they didn't apply to them. They lived in poverty, and they had bad quality things around them, but they focused on helping others and union with God. So they were some of the happiest people who ever lived. So that's it's a great breakdown by Father Spitzer on the levels of happiness, different types of happiness. So, Steve, do you want to Okay, keep on going here. Okay, we need the church to achieve eternal happiness and earthly happiness. I mentioned before eternal happiness. You can learn about that in other classes, but today we're focusing on earthly happiness. A church going enhances life outcomes. Talked about mental health in the past, up until now. Now we're talking about life outcomes, like marital success and job success, academic success, just overall success like that. So churchgoers, as we talked about, are less prone to depression and anxiety. They're less prone to alcohol and drug abuse or unethical and criminal behavior. And, of course, one reason why non-churchgoers are less happy because they get into unethical and criminal behavior, and that makes them less happy. Churchgoers are more prone to happier and more stable marriages, more well-adjusted kids, better grades. The kids tend to get better grades in school. Not always the case, but on average, that's the case. Higher educational attainment and higher lifetime earnings. Churchgoers tend to graduate from college, go to college and graduate to college to a greater extent than non-churchgoers. And they actually higher lifetime earnings. Well, that's not something. There's something called the prosperity gospel. That's a line of thinking in one of the Protestants, where if you're faithful to God and you love God, then you're going to get rich. But that shouldn't be a reason for going to church. That's definitely not in the Catholic Church. But that's what I said before. It's one of the added bonuses. It just happens to be an added bonus. It shouldn't be the reason you go to church to have like higher lifetime earnings. But often is the case. Okay, the divorce rate based on this is. These are graphs, and we go through a series of graphs based on religious affiliation and frequency of church going. Okay, this is the divorce rate for the religiously, and this is the last graph is kind of interesting compared to the rest. The religiously unaffiliated divorce rate is 50%. The Christians overall divorce rate is 42%, and a lot of times people say that Christians and Catholics divorce at the same rate as non-Christians, as atheists and agnostics, but that's comparing Catholics and Christians overall. But if you just compare Christians and Catholics Catholics and Protestants who go to church regularly, and then the divorce rate is much lower than agnostics and atheists. So divorce rate is 42% for Christians overall. Church-going evangelicals, Protestants, who are really on fire for their faith, are lower divorce rate. This study didn't happen to single out Catholics, so we're just going to have to go with what this study reported. Church-going evangelicals, 38%, but get this, case people call themselves evangelical Christians who say that they're on fire for the faith, but never go to church and never really do much. Get this, their divorce rate is 60%, even higher than the religiously unaffiliated. So that's just goes to show that it's not good to be lukewarm in one's faith. Grade point average among high schoolers, junior high and high schoolers, okay? 3.21, that's a B plus or so for the very religiously engaged. For the moderately religious engaged, the GPA is an average of 3. And for the those who are not engaged in their faith, the GPA is lower at 2.92. So just go to show that kids do better academically when they're engaged in their faith. Now, received a college degree by frequency of church going. Actually, I'll get into high schoolers right after this again, after this slide. Let me just talk about received a college degree. Now, in the past, up until about maybe 50 or 60 years ago, it was the case where atheists, non-churchgoers, typically had higher advanced degrees or college degrees to a greater extent than non-churchgoers. That's because a lot more people went to church back then. And the atheists back then, they were, I guess they were into science, and they thought that science, there was no need for God, and if you focus on science, that's definitely not the case. So it was the case back then where atheists and agnostics actually went to college to a greater extent than non and Christians, church going people. That's not the case anymore. Now they have found that those who go to church weekly or more graduate from college on average 32% of those people on average graduate from college. Those who go to church weekly or more monthly or more, okay, 27%. Less than monthly church going, over 19%. Those who never go to church on average graduate college at a rate of 14%. So the trend is really reversed over the past 50 or 60 years or so. Even, in fact, somebody wrote a book about this. This is by Ilana Horowitz. She's a Jewish woman. She's has a PhD from Stanford. I think that's when she started writing the book. Maybe this was her thesis. And now she's a professor of theology, of Jewish theology at Tulane University. But she interviewed and focused on young people, mostly Christians, and their academic habits and results. And she found that religiously engaged adolescents tend to develop habits highly valued in the public school system, namely conscientiousness and cooperation. Conscientiousness refers to being self-disciplined, organized, and achievement-oriented, while cooperation or agreeableness involves being considerate, kind, sympathetic. So that's one of the reasons why church-going kids tend to do better academically than non-church-going kids, because they pick up these great habits and attitudes and self-discipline from their church background. They apply that to school. Now, relative this is the area of crime delinquency. Relative probability of committing a crime by frequency of church going. Okay, someone who never goes to church versus someone who goes to church more than once a week. You can see that there's a steady decline in the level of crime the more one goes to church. So, two scholars analyzed. They interviewed 2,300 males. Age 16 to 24 in low-income areas of Boston, Philadelphia, and Chicago, they noticed a prominent pattern. If church-going was helping to keep them out of crime, another study compared men from inner-city community who eventually landed in prison and those who did not go to prison. The contrast was stark. The prison avoiders, for the most part, were regular church-goers, whereas the majority of prisoners either had never attended church or stopped going around the age of 11. So church going is really key to help lift people out of poverty and really cross the inner city. A lot of the reasons that the inner cities are going downhill these days, I mean, well, in addition to all the other reasons, is that churches are closing, a lot of Catholic schools are closing in the inner city, and that's a significant factor in increase in crime rate. Okay, now we're going to talk about how church enhances physical health. As I mentioned, that's what I put first. That's the topic I put first in the title of my book, because that's more surprising. More surprising that church would enhance your physical health, because we think of church as a sedentary activity. You're going to church, you're sitting down, and you're just sitting there and, you know, reading the Bible or whatnot, and how could that actually help your physical health? Whereas on Sunday morning, you could go out running, jogging, or exercises versus being in church. But it is the case that church going is better for your physical health than not going to church. Okay, churchgoers, this is pretty amazing. Churchgoers live an average of 6 to 7 years longer than non-churchgoers. And that's based on somebody who's 20 years old, who goes to church and continues to go to church for the rest of their life. Definitely, if you two keep on going to church, you'll live an average of 6 to 7 years longer than non-churchgoers. And for adults, maybe if you start going to church regularly in your middle age, it might not be that much of a gap in years, but it'll still be significant. It might be 3 or 4 years longer than non-churchgoers. You know what was key? For African Americans, the same study found that that African American churchgoers live an average of 14 years longer than African American non-churchgoers, which is pretty amazing. See some of those African American churches where they're just singing and dancing, they're just so in love with God, and just proclaiming their faith, that really, it's just, it really has a positive effect on your physical well-being. Okay, it reduces, the church going to reduce the likelihood of many ailments, including cancer, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis, asthma, emphysema, tuberculosis, allergies, diseases of the liver, kidney, and digestive system, and much, much more. Actually, let me just back up to this graph. Those who never go to church live an average of 75.3 years. People who go to church less than once a week, 79.7 years. Once a week, 81.9, and those who go to church more than once a week, 82.9, they lived up to about 83 years old. So, and for African Americans, it was 85 years, I think it was average age for those who go to church regularly. It's about 83 or 84 years old versus like 69 or 70 for those who don't go to church. Okay, this is a graph. This is one of the many studies looking at the death rate after heart surgery at Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center up in New Hampshire. They looked at 232 patients based on religiosity. And this is death rate 6 months after they got discharged from the hospital. What they found that those who said that they were not at all or slightly or fairly religious, moderately or lukewarm religious, had a death rate of 11%. 11% of those people died after they were discharged from the hospital within the next 6 months. And for those who said they were deeply religious, the death rate was zero. Well, that's pretty stark evidence right there of the physical benefits of church. Now, religion and your doctor. The positive effects of church are so strong that more and more physicians and psychotherapists recommend faith-based therapy to their patients. Even agnostic and atheist therapists and doctors are recommending. They recognize the value, even though they might not go to church themselves or be believed themselves. They want the best for their patients. So a lot of them are even recommending that they go to church and practice their faith, take their faith more seriously. Okay, this also often results in faster recovery rates. Churchgoers, on average, spend less time in the hospital than non-churchgoers. I think it's about, one study found that about non-churchgoers spent 20, where non-churchgoers spent an average of 20 days in the hospital, the churchgoers only spent an average of 10 or 11 days in the hospital for the same sickness. And doctors and the medical establishment is taking note of this. Even medical schools are offering classes in this whole topic, the physical benefits of church going and spirituality. They're not necessarily required classes, a lot of them are elective classes, but I think all medical schools now have classes in this topic. Even the Association of American Medical Colleges has recommendations for guidance regarding spirituality. Let's watch a video which is basically an overview of the positive outcomes of regular church going.
Who would have thought that church adds 6 to 7 years to your life on average? Whether it's church, synagogue, mosque, or temple, literally thousands of scientific studies confirm that people who regularly attend worship services are more likely to live longer, have better physical health, better mental health, higher educational attainment, higher incomes, stronger marriages, stronger families, and or a greater sense of meaning and purpose. They're less likely to get heart disease, cancer, and a host of other ailments. They're not as prone to depression, anxiety, suicide, divorce, drug and alcohol abuse, or crime and delinquency. Their kids are more apt to be well-adjusted and get better grades. And church lifts poor and minorities. What is it about prayer and worship that so improves health, happiness, and longevity? There are actual physical effects within the brain, benefiting both mind and body.
talk about reasons why church going enhances mental and physical health. Because, like I said, how can your physical health actually be improved if you're just sitting in church? Okay. Churchgoer, now there's some obvious reasons. Churchgoers often view their bodies as a temple of the Holy Spirit. That's what it says in the Bible. And 1 Corinthians says, do you not know that your bodies are temples of the Holy Spirit, who is in you, whom you have received from God? So, if you know your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, then you can attempt to treat it that way. You're less likely to smoke and drink, and more likely to eat right, and more likely to do physical exercise. And that's definitely the case with certain denominations, like Mormons and Seventh-day Adventists. They're not allowed to drink alcohol or smoke at all. So their health tends to be much better than other denominations. For Catholics, we're allowed to smoke, but in moderation. Not allowed to get drunk, but you can have a few drinks here and there. Okay, social interaction. Another reason is the social interaction and camaraderie that we get at church. That's proven to be good for both mental and physical health. Face-to-face interaction, what we're doing now, is actually good for mental and physical health. And that's what you're doing in church. Unlike people who call themselves spiritual and not religious and don't go to church or communal worship, they lack that social interaction. Scientists haven't necessarily determined why social interaction improves mental and physical health, especially physical health, but they have determined that it is definitely the case, that it does improve. Okay. By contrast, social isolation, yes, there are some reasons. Social isolation raises stress hormones and inflammation, which boosts the risk of heart disease. Okay, now we'll look at the persons who died after heart surgery. Okay, this is also at the Dartmouth-Hitchcock Medical Center in New Hampshire. They grouped people according to those who said that they were neither religious nor did they take part in group activities. Now, their death rate within 6 months was 20%. Now, those who weren't religious, but they did engage in group activities, whether it be bingo or bowling or, book club or whatnot, okay, their death rate, six-month mortality rate, was only 8%. Now, for those who were religious but did not went to church but didn't engage in too many social activities, had the same rate at 8%. And those who were both religious and did frequently engage in group art activities, the death rate was only 3%. So, it's pretty interesting finding. Okay, religion, another big reason is religion instills a strong sense of meaning and purpose. That we're deep, knowing that we're, unlike Richard Dawkins he was in one of the video lately, he's the world's most prominent famous atheist. He thinks that we're just molecules and nothing else, and there's no higher purpose for us. It just happened to be, just continuing along the evolutionary spectrum. And then we die, that's it. We have no soul, that's what he thinks. But we religious people know that we're deeply loved by our eternal creator, and that the present world, this world, is just a shadow of the world to come, of the eternal world, something I'm really looking forward to. So, I think somebody said that we're bathed in an ocean of love from God. So if you have that in your mind, you always think about that. You tend to have a much stronger sense of meaning and purpose for your life, and that really benefits you, both mental and physically. Creates certain chemicals in your brain. We might get into that a little bit later if we have time. Chemicals that actually have a beneficial physical effect on your body. Okay. Another reason is a focus on others rather than the self. Now, we talked about level 3 happiness, volunteering, and charitable activities. That they found that even if you're not religious, doing those charitable activities actually improves your mental and physical health. Volunteering is good for mind and body. It's the same sense of accomplishment, self-worth, meaning and purpose. There was an organization that put out a report confirming that frequent volunteers have lower rates of mortality and depression. One study uncovered that over a 5-year period, the mortality rate of elderly who volunteered with 2 or more organizations was 44% lower than non-volunteers. It's mainly this personal sense of accomplishment, meaning and purpose, self-worth that lead to good outcomes. Just the social interaction that comes with volunteering can engender that sense of self-worth and happiness. And churchgoers tend to volunteer both their time and money to a greater extent than non-churchgoers. Among those who donate money, it was 89% of churchgoers, only just 76% of non-churchgoers, which is still pretty good. Non-churchgoers, they still, it's good to know that non-churchgoers or atheists still can be generous. Okay, those who volunteered their time for charitable activities, whether it be formally or informally, like helping their neighbor, you know, driving your neighbor to, you know, an appointment regularly or something, 82% for churchgoers versus 51% for non-churchgoers. So churchgoers affords a lot of opportunities for volunteering activities, not only volunteering for the church, for the church itself, like we're doing right now, you know, with religious education, like lecturing and things and charitable activities, but also for church-sponsored charitable activities like donation drives and things, and volunteering to help with that. There are positive. Another reason for why church-going enhances mental and physical health is positive beliefs and attitudes such as hope, trust in God, forgiveness, gratitude, and self-discipline. These influence the production of something called molecules of emotion, or actually sometimes they're informally referred to as molecules of emotion. I mean, there's technical terms for these certain molecules. I won't necessarily, you know, say what they are, but they're pretty complicated. Molecules of emotion, there's are hormones and enzymes that affect blood pressure, immune system, etc. And there can be negative molecules of emotion, like your fight or flight response. You can have those high stress levels. It triggers your fight or flight response, which raises your blood pressure and lowers your immune system in order to kind of redirect resources from your body from one place to the other. So if you don't go to church, if you don't have a good sense of meaning and purpose, then you have constant stress like that. That can really have a negative effect on your health. Matter of fact, they found that men under 50 that have anger issues and constant stress, and then don't go to church, have something like, you know, the rate of heart attacks is something like four times higher than those who do go to church and that have a good sense of meaning and purpose. And there are also certain molecules of emotion that have, they're called your parasympathetic system, where the molecules have beneficial effects. They have a calming effect on your physical makeup. And this is a graph that showing that those who were had already had people who have prone to anger and forgiveness, negative thoughts, they had elevated levels of something called inflammatory cytokines. And these are people who had normal, who didn't have those kinds of thoughts and attitudes, have normal levels of inflammatory cytokines. So when they got COVID, this is the first, you know, version of COVID that was more virulent than it is now, they didn't reach the certain, there's a threshold. They reached this threshold of cytokines, they could die. Whereas if your number of inflammatory cytokines start from a lower level, they go up to here, and you're still outside of that threshold and you survive. And churchgoers tend to be, you know, down here, non-churchgoers up here. Positive beliefs and attitudes, such as hope, trust, and... Wait, I guess the direct... This is something that the academic scientific studies at the Ivy League schools and other schools don't talk about, because this is... they're talking about just the secular reasons for... scientific reasons for beneficial aspects of church and faith. But we know as churchgoers that there are direct graces from God. There are spiritual benefits from going to church. If you praise and worship Him, He's bound to return the favor. In fact, you know, I haven't seen the study, but it could be that this is the biggest reason for better mental and physical health among churchgoers. There is a certain genre of studies called intercessory prayer studies to show, determine whether prayer really works. They have two groups of people in the hospital, take heart patients. They have one group where they have people praying for them, praying for their quick recovery. They're called intercessors. And another group where nobody's praying for them. And they've done these studies comparing the two groups. This is the control group. The control group, nobody's praying for them. Whereas the the prayer group, people are praying for them. And in the majority of the studies, in fact, three-quarters of the studies, the prayer group have better outcomes. Either they recover quicker or they survive to a greater extent. So that's pretty amazing. That's kind of, in a way, that's kind of scientific evidence of the benefits of prayer and the fact that direct graces from God is a real thing. Now, we had a picture of confession early. There's confession, I like to refer to confession as a psychotherapy session for free, basically. Okay, confession, this is Carl Jung. Yeah, great, the eminent psychotherapist. That confession sometimes has a truly redeeming effect. A tremendous feeling of relief which usually follows a confession can be ascribed to the readmission of the lost sheep into the human community. His moral isolation and seclusion, which were so difficult to bear, cease. Herein lies the chief psychological value of confession. He also said that if my patients went to the sacrament of reconciliation, that's confession, I'd lose 99% of them. They say that after Vatican II, when there was a big drop-off in the number of Catholics who went to confession, said the number of Catholics in psychiatric wards shut up. So that just put us another little proof that confession is wonderful, has great therapeutic value. But again, the main reason is spiritual. You shouldn't go there to improve your mental health. You should go there to improve your spiritual health. Let's watch a video of the summary of reasons behind positive outcomes.
Literally thousands of peer-reviewed studies have determined that people who regularly go to church are more likely to have better mental and physical health than people who don't go to church. Why is this so? This speaks to factors that include the social interaction one has at church, as well as putting others before self, such as through volunteering for church-sponsored charity drives. This also leads to having a keen sense of meaning and purpose, and thanks to direct graces from God. Religion can give meaning to suffering. So says Dr. Francie Hart Rothman, chief psychiatry resident at UC Irvine Medical Center. I see this firsthand, time and time again, with many of my patients reporting they would have attempted suicide long ago, but they did not have faith, which provided them with hope in otherwise hopeless circumstances.
Okay, let me just summarize what we've talked about. We've talked about the mental health crisis and how church going enhances mental health, enhances life outcomes, enhances physical health, and reasons why church going enhances mental and physical health. But you know what? And at the end, I ask myself, and I talk about this in the book, what's more important, mental or physical health? And I personally believe that mental health is more important than physical health, because what's most important is eternity, where you can spend eternity. And in terms of mental health, now, there are certain aspects of it that are not sins. Depression, that's not a sin. Anxiety is not a sin. But rage, unforgiveness, substance abuse, delinquency, and despair are sins. Yes, despair, that's it's actually when you lose hope in the goodness of God. It's considered to be a sin. So that's why it's important to have good mental, to avoid these things, because a lot of these are associated with sins. Whereas, now it's important to wholeheartedly embrace God and His church to help steer clear of such sins and gain eternal salvation. Now, what about physical? Everyone wants to live longer, but from an eternal life standpoint, the length of one's earthly life or prevalence of disease may not so much matter. What matters is how much one pleases God while alive. Physical diseases and disabilities are not sins, but they can even be blessings in disguise. I talked about the 15th century monk Thomas of Kempis. Love this quote from him. It is a vanity to wish for a long life and to care little about a well-spent life. And Blaise Pascal, a French philosopher, said this: O Lord, let me not henceforth desire health or life, except to spend them for you, with you, and in you. Benefits of a long earthly life, okay? So, and there could be benefits to a long earthly life, because it gives you more time to praise and worship God. If you regularly go to church and spend those extra years of your life engaging in prayer, penance, and works of mercy, not only will you be happier, but you're also putting yourself in a good position for the next world. So if you want to learn more about this fascinating topic, as I mentioned, I have this book called Holy Health, How Church Makes You Healthier and Happier, incorporates about 250 or so scientific studies. And the first 16 chapters are what we've talked about today. And if somebody in the fifth, the last chapter, it's on Catholic, it's on Christian Catholic apologetics, reasons to believe. You know, somebody reads this book and they think that, wow, a lot of great reasons for going to church. But what if I don't believe? You know, I'm not a believer. Well, that's what the last chapter is about: reasons to believe, apologetics, which I like to sum it up as proof of God, proof of the Gospels, proof of the Catholic Church, and that's what our organization is all about, Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America. We give these presentations on the logical basis for Catholic faith. In fact, our lead Granger wrote a book on the logical basis for the Catholic faith. Now, my book's available on Amazon. You can buy it if you're interested. You can buy a copy now and make it a great gift for, you know, a great reading for anybody, but also a great gift for anybody if you want, who you want to try to help bring into the faith. If you, what I say is, if you can't convince somebody to return to the faith on spiritual grounds, convince them on worldly grounds. Okay. Is the before we get into questions or comments, I just want to mention some of the other books here. Steve Hemler is the president of CANA, Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America, and he wrote this book called "The Reality of God." What's the subtitle, Steve?
The Layman's Guide to Scientific Evidence.
Okay, A Layman's Guide for Scientific Evidence of the Creator. Steve also wrote Search No More, The Keys to Truth and Happiness, Catholic Stories of Faith and Hope, How God Brings Good Out of Suffering, and I think I'm going to have this by my side when it's my turn to, you know, it's my turn to die, or when my love, my wife or loved ones or me, because it's just great, you know, stories, hope, you know, inspiring stories of hope in, you know, amid suffering. And this is the book I mentioned before, It Just Makes Sense, by Lee Granger, A Logical Basis for the Catholic Faith. You can buy those on Amazon. I don't know if you have any copies with you now, but they don't. But are there, okay, it's 8:45, and we go till 9, I understand, so we have 15 minutes. Is there anybody, do you have any questions? We can be glad to answer any questions, or just get into a discussion about this topic. Anybody have any questions or comments? Well, let me ask you, did this surprise you? Or were any of you already aware of some of the worldly benefits of church and faith? I mean, I wasn't aware until I started reading about 10 years ago. Maybe it came across a blog post, maybe an article. Sometimes you see articles about it in various publications. And there are literally hundreds or thousands of scientific studies about it, and I was dumbfounded. Why wasn't there no books about it? I didn't think there were any books written about it. So I figured, okay, well, I'm going to start writing a book about it myself. So finally, you know, I got done with it. I kind of started it, worked on it for a couple of years, then put the project aside because I came across a quote from C.S. Lewis that said, if you want to be a good Christian, it shouldn't be for worldly reasons, it should be for because you want to be, you know, because of your faith in God and your love for Jesus. So I said, well, maybe I really should focus on that. But came to conclude later that this is just a fringe benefit. It's just an added bonus to going to church. Of course, the reason you want to go to church, praise and worship God, and read the Bible, carry out faith is for love of God, not for any worldly reasons. It's just an added bonus. But that's not to say that there could be somebody who wants to join the church for these reasons and then they develop their faith later on. That's kind of what happened to me. I was kind of lukewarm Catholic back then, and I said, no, a church, you know, one reason for these benefits of church is that associated with these group activities. So I started going to the men's group, That Man Is You, and I think just from the men, that was about 10 years ago. And I learned a lot about the faith, so much about the faith in this men's group. It's called It's this organization out of Houston that, where you every Saturday morning watch a video, and then we have small group discussions afterwards. I just learned so much over the past 10 years about that. Now I'm the group leader of our organization here at St. Veronica's. So anybody's interested, it's called That Man Is You, and we meet at 7 a.m. Saturday mornings. And just obviously just for men. They also a lot of women's groups here too. So anyway, that's what one of the things that prompted me to get more involved in the church, and I grew in the faith. So now I consider myself on fire for the faith. I love the faith. So that's how I came here, and that's how I ended up writing this book. And it turns out, I mentioned before that there were no other books on this topic. There are two other books on this, but they were written 20 and 25 years ago. So this is the most recent book on this topic. Yeah?
A few days ago, I sent your name, Scott, a few research.
Yeah.
Used statistics about the religious companies of the U.S.
Yeah.
Since 90% of the U.S. population said they are
Christian. Right.
Now it's below 60% overall Christian.
Yeah.
Catholics are even less.
Right.
So lost more adherence.
Yeah.
My question to Scott was, I just gave the recent article and asked if RCIA is effective or not, and what needs to be done to make it more effective.
Yeah.
According to my calculations, on average, 1% people are moving away from the religion. Mm-hmm. More than 1%, close to 2% from Catholicism.
Yeah. I think one reason is because they're not aware of this.
If I calculate for the regional Northern Virginia, 150,000 people will be moving away from church this year.
Yeah.
And here, hardly a dozen people are here to listen to RCIA lectures. I don't know how many become
churchgoers
or Christians.
I know, the message has to get out. I mean, not a lot of people are aware of this. They don't teach this. They don't teach this at PBI, I don't think. And you don't read too much about it, but the message has to get out. And it's kind of ironic, because there's a health craze where everybody's eating all these health foods and exercise, they want to live longer and have better health. Yet, but not going to church is a health risk every bit as much as smoking is a health risk. So they need to know that this is good for their health and they should go to church, but again, that's not the reason they should go to church. They need to know that the Christian church, the Christian faith is true, that the Gospels are true, that the Bible is true, and that the Catholic faith is the true church of God, and that's what our organization is all about. You can talk about that in a separate presentation. A logical basis and actual proof of why Christianity is true, that God is true, that God exists. Christianity is true, that Jesus lived, taught, and performed miracles and was raised from the dead, and that he established his church and made St. Peter the head of it. He became the Pope, and his successors became the Pope, and he talked about Peter, you're the rock, and upon this rock I will build my church. He was referring to the Catholic Church. And there's all kinds of books, presentations, explaining why that's the case. So people need to know that. I don't think they don't focus too much. When you go to homilies, that's one beef I had in homilies, going to church. Priests never talked about that. You know, I was sitting there, they're talking about the gospel, but I'm sitting there, this is back when I was a lukewarm Catholic. Well, how do I know that the gospel is true? That I was reading this book, watching these videos about evidence, truth of the truth of the authenticity of the gospel. So that really was one of the things that really turned me around in my thinking of the faith. So yeah, so message has to get out. And a lot of people, the media, the mainstream media, they're suppressing that message. I mean, sometimes you see things about the church and health in the mainstream media, but you don't see too much on apologetics, because if you want to be cynical about it, maybe they have an agenda to promote. But if you look hard enough on the internet, there's plenty on the internet, you just type in the word proof of God, and you'll come across a lot of things on the internet. So, another thing that prompted me, that really front of me to come, to take this faith seriously was YouTube videos, NDEs, near-death experiences, amazing proof for an afterlife of heaven and also of hell. That's what really prompted me to come back to the faith. This proof of people that have NDEs in hell. That's something that's a place I do not want to go. So that group is really what prompted me to take the faith.
You mentioned there is a great movie out now. It's out just for a few more days. It's called After Death. Have any of you seen it? And Near Death Experience. Have you seen it?
I have not seen it. I haven't seen it for it.
Yeah, it's by the same people that do the Chosen series, Angel Studios. And it's an excellent movie. I saw it on Saturday with my daughter, and it's outstanding. People that have died and, you know, come back to life again talk about what happens, and it's absolutely astounding. And some of them did go to, you know, had a hellish experience. And so, you know, that hell and heaven are both real. But it's an excellent movie. It's called After Death. Are you going to click the website?
Oh, yeah.
And you have a handout?
Uh-huh, yes.
So you had it.
That website?
Yeah. Oh. So that's our website, the Catholic Apologetics Institute of North America, canaweb.org. And if you go there, you can find lots of information about the Catholic Church, about why I believe in God, why I believe in Jesus, why I go to church, what about suffering, you know, all these big questions. And it's on the back of that handout in the yellow box. The website is there for you to go to. A lot of videos as well.
Well, another thing that convinced me, a lot of people think that the devil is just a myth. Oh, that's right, you already have that. But if you study exorcisms, the priests who are exorcists and talk about their experiences, There's a point when you have to admit that and say that these priests, these guys are not making this up. This is real stuff. Real stuff that goes on during exorcisms, this preternatural thing, a phenomenon that can't be explained by science. As a matter of fact, just on the Fox News website today, they had an article about that, interviewing a priest about what happens during exorcism. So that's proof right there of not only the supernatural world, but of the devil by extension. So the devil is real. The devil's unfortunately all around us, always tempting us. So that's another message that has to get out. And maybe if that were the case, then people wouldn't be falling away from the faith, but coming into it. Also, you know what? They found that even though there's a drop-off in faith among a lot of people, it's mostly lukewarm Christians that are leaving the faith. There's Alana Horowitz, now she's that scholar who wrote the book on the academic of how church-going kids tend to be more academically inclined. She found that there's about a steady 15% of the population who are on fire for the faith, whether Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, I don't know, maybe higher than Muslims, who are on fire for the faith, take their faith seriously, and about steady 15%, whereas other people, you know, others are less on fire for the faith, more lukewarm. That's about stayed the same. That 15% number has stayed the same over the course of decades. Hasn't changed too much. We want to raise that 15% number, you know, to 20%, 30%. So the good news is that the people who are leaving the faith tend to be lukewarm in the first place.
My question to Scott was more kind of finding out what actions need to be taken to make it more effective.
Well, like I said, I wish priests would talk about apologetics more. But we have alternatives, like a lot of stuff on the internet about apologetics.
Mm-hmm. My experience is less than it's the community there I got to know. My husband's son is in the options program. It's a special disabilities program. And just talking to the other parents, the community that we developed, and a sponsor goes to St. Veronica's. And even down the street, there's another young man that goes to UDI and taking him to high school for as long as she wants to be seen. And it's just that sense of community that drew me to him. I wasn't getting that sense of community from my other people. I just wasn't getting it. It was all very, I felt very superficial. Or I felt a deep faith with people that I connected with. And that goes to like my son. He's lost 40 pounds. I mean, and I think that anxiety that he was experiencing has really started to wean away as he's gotten older by going to having a Christian faith education.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
So, I mean, that's my experience. And it's kind of a blind thing. But you have to go if you can't. Sometimes all the statistics. I think that blind faith also.
Right. I mean, most people, I mean, that's great. My faith, just believing.
A leap of faith without the evidence.
I'm an evidence-based guy.
But still, a leap of faith.
But other people don't need that.
And I know everybody has to go, but I would say, I think that the evidence stuff would be really good for, like, I have friends who are atheists, mm-hmm. and they only listen to science and evidence, and, like, how would it, you know, selfishly, how would this benefit me? Mm-hmm. So I think that is, you know, unless you are someone who's prone, you know, and it's kind of a heart thing, but I have a few friends who are atheists, and they would, they'd be like, well, I don't
think
they
say, you know, they need to
see
evidence.
Right.
Take them to that movie.
And also look at the Cana website. A lot of our presentations are posted on the Cana website, and we'd be happy to talk sometime, too. We only have, I think it's 9 o'clock right now. At the beginning of this, I forgot to say an opening prayer. Okay, so give me that. Let's go ahead and say.
I forgot to remind you.
Oh, yeah. No, you did remind me, but then when I started.
No. Usually if somebody starts without it, I chime in, but it went right over my head.
Sorry, we'll close with an Our Father. May the Father, Son, the Holy Spirit. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. Forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And if you want to read more about it, here's the book. You can either buy it now or get it online on Amazon. There's also an audio book. I listen to a lot of audio books. It's $15, by the way. That was great. It was great talking to you. And Scott, thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for coming.
Present.
That was great. Have a great week, everyone.